Welcome to the Lean Commerce Podcast, the show that sheds light on hidden levers that can help you 10x your business. Join us as we talk to experts and find out the 1% improvements that you can apply right now to take you there.
Hey, everybody. I am here today with Dan Brownsher, the president and CEO of Channel Key, and Kristen Whiteley. She's the director of corporate marketing at Channel Key. I'm going to be diving in. It's an exciting topic and one that, is not been explored a whole lot on this podcast, but diving into Amazon directly. You know, a big part of our podcast has been, how do people survive in the age of Amazon? And maybe the title of this podcast would be, if you can't beat them, join them. And really, how can you work with Amazon to grow your business? And you know, what should investors look for if they're going to invest in an Amazon company? Dan, Kristen, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Lance. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thrilled to have you. I thought that the real genesis of Channel Key was neat. Can you tell us a little bit about what Channel Key does, and then we can back up into how you got there?
Yeah, absolutely. So Channel Key is a Las Vegas-based agency, and we partner with brand owners and manufacturers of products. And those could be consumer products or business products. And essentially what we do is we provide a full service solution to help them create a best-in-class Amazon business. And that can mean a lot of different things to different people. The way we kind of simply put it is we will help build a strategic business plan for our clients based upon what they're trying to accomplish on the platform. And that can look different based on who the brand is or the vendor is and what their goals are. And then once we align on what that is and what it looks like and what the requirements are, they will hand over the keys to my team, and we will actually execute on that plan and be their outsourced team of experts and solution providers.
Wow. So you got an Amazon business you want to take to the next level. Channel Key helps get a strategy that makes sense for your brand to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. It could be you've been on the platform for years and it's just flat for you and you're not getting the results and you need to supercharge it. It could be, we've got clients that are launching their brand and or products for the first time. And maybe they raised a bunch of money on Kickstarter or Indiegogo or one of those crowdsourcing sites, and they literally want to create their business. So we work with folks of all shapes and sizes, walks of life, from startups to Fortune 100 companies. It's really interesting to see, and a lot of the problems that they're facing are similar in some cases, and a lot of times they're different. So we see it all.
You came into the Amazon world via building your own brand, right? Can you tell me a little bit about your story of how you got into founding your own business, the road you took to get to where you are today?
Yeah. It's very relevant because without it, we wouldn't be able to position ourselves the way we do. And I hope after kind of explaining it, you'll understand why. So about 11 years ago, I co-founded another company called Trend Nation with a couple of buddies, and essentially created this e-commerce business really with the express reason to understand what it's like to sell stuff on the internet. So we started doing that. We started as a private label business. So we were sourcing jewelry and wallets and money clips from China through Alibaba. So literally just going to Alibaba, finding manufacturers, bringing this product in overseas, wiring money to people we've never spoken to before, live or met in person. And then, weeks later, we'd have boxes of women's jewelry and purse hooks and men's accessories show up on our doorstep. And we started literally just selling that product on eBay, building listings, fulfilling product out of our basements. I mean, I had stacks and boxes of cufflinks, men's cufflinks in my basement, and was literally every night packing orders and then taking to the post office the next day. Fast forward that business to current day, it's still active, it's still thriving and growing. We've got about 50 people on staff, actually also based in Las Vegas. We've done about $250 million in revenue through the Amazon platform alone. The genesis of Channel Key came out of Trend Nation. And Lance, I don't know how specific you want me to get, but Trend Nation pivoted multiple times. I can go into that story, Lance, if you want me to, or we can keep it high level.
I think that we'll probably come back to it because, one of the big ideas that I think everybody wants to hear about is like what's happening with Amazon. And sometimes looking at those pivots in the past gives a little bit of an indicator of how you might have to pivot in the future. You started Trend Nation, you know, had some good partners there, still have Trend Nation running strong. Then Channel Key came up. Now, let's just jump directly into kind of what's happening on Amazon. On Amazon, there's just so much competition. And how has Amazon changed since you started 11 years ago?
I guess I would say, how hasn't it changed? What Amazon is and has done has removed a lot of the traditional layers of distribution. In the past, you go from manufacturer to wholesaler to distributor to retailer, and there might be some additional layers in between. And what Amazon has done is really removed all those interior layers. And essentially, you can be a manufacturer and be selling very easily directly to consumer. One of the biggest changes is they've created that sort of platform and environment within the micro level of Amazon. I mean, the way they've gotten there, they've created assortment. They created the Prime program and platform, and there's about 100 million Prime members in the United States alone right now, each paying $120 a year. So you can do the quick math on that. They've created an unbelievable fulfillment network. And in my opinion, that is really the basis and infrastructure that's created the value for consumers on the platform. So, you know, I can buy anything I want, and in most cases at the best price, and have it delivered to my doorstep in 2 days. That is the value driver, in my opinion. So from a brand and or seller standpoint, or a vendor on the platform, the advent of FBA and or offering Prime, so having Amazon do your fulfillment, was a huge shift. The launching of a program called Brand Registry was really a signal to the market that Amazon was leaning more towards protecting brands on the platform, mitigating counterfeits, working with trusted trademark brands. I think that was a pivotal point on the platform, creating more trust with customers, but also letting brands actually leverage their equity and own their IP and control it as best as possible. One of the huge changes that occurred was the introduction of the advertising platform. And that was not that long ago. I mean, it was three, four, 5 years ago. And the ad business for Amazon has already exceeded $10 billion. It's unbelievable. It's one of the fastest growing business units inside of Amazon. And literally, it didn't exist 5 years ago, at least at scale. It was in beta. And so, you know, Amazon's created this unbelievable infrastructure for consumers, but also for brands to access customers quickly and easily and without having the traditional barriers and blocks to launching a business. And now you can advertise and drive traffic. And it's a huge revenue volume generated for Amazon, but it also, for those that are performing, brands that are performing, you can outpace bigger brands if you know how to execute on the platform really well because that infrastructure is in place. So those are just a few of the changes at the micro and macro level. The constant with Amazon is change, and that's part of the reason why we're around, because it's complex, and you've got to stay up to date on what's happening, because if you don't, there's a good chance that one of your competitors is going to start outpacing you on the platform.
No, that makes sense. Man, we're just dropping teasers all over the place, but wait, there's more. So one of the, you know, with all that change, and from an investor standpoint, I look at some Amazon businesses, and they can make me a little nervous, not because they're bad businesses, right? They have amazing margins, but they just change so fast, right? If I'm paying 3 to 5 times annual earnings, and I go, oh, shucks, is it going to be here in 3 years? So how do you look at these private, especially brands that are private label? How do you defend a private label brand?
That's a good question. When you say private label, are you talking about like an Amazon private label brand, or are you talking about anybody that's developed a private label brand that's selling on the platform?
Anybody that's developed a private label brand. So if we think of like Trend Nation, you guys started out, and actually maybe the root question here would be, did you all have to pivot away from private label products and develop more proprietary products, or is that something you guys still do?
Actually, what we did, Lance, is we started as a private label company and pivoted away from that to becoming more of a distributor. branded merchandise that you can buy in Macy's and Nordstrom and Bloomingdale's. You know, we were working in the past with Tommy Hilfiger and Kenneth Cole and Ted Baker and some really large brands in the SLG space. And we pivoted away from that model back to private label because we thought that was the most defensive strategy that you could leverage on the platform. And the root of that is you need to be able to control your distribution, control your brand, control your pricing, control your merchandising. And the only way that you can do that is if you are the brand owner. So we think Amazon is a playground. If you want to be the most effective for folks that own their brand and that own their distribution. And so creating a long-term and sustainable business on Amazon, whether it's private label or whether it's, you know, somebody like a Perry Ellis, if you can effectively control your distribution, if you can effectively advertise and merchandise your assortment better or as good as your competitors, and you can make good quality products where there's demand, you have a good defensible strategy. And if you can play into that the Amazon search algorithm and continually get your products to rank, whether it's through ad spend or organically, you can have a long-term viable business. But you can't sit on it. You've got to constantly iterate and be active and consuming the data that you're getting to the platform and making the necessary changes. Build good products, get good reviews, advertise on the platform, merchandise your assortment, and continue to kind of monitor and iterate, and you've got a long-term viable business. I don't think Amazon's going anywhere. And in fact, I think the adoption is just going to continue. I'm very bullish on building brands on Amazon.
Now, when I think of building a great Amazon brand, it's a lot of the brands I've worked with have been off Amazon, kind of direct to consumer on your own e-commerce site. When somebody comes to you guys and they say, we've got a brand idea, ChannelKey, how can you help us get this brand launch successfully? Can you give me a high level overview of the way you would approach somebody who's at the idea phase, or they've got the product already from the manufacturer, but this is where they're testing it. They're going to see if it actually sells.
The way that we would approach it is like we would at Trend Nation. Okay. So we would look at the infrastructure and really try to figure out all the key components that are going to be required for the brand to be successful. Okay. So one of those is fulfillment. How are you going to get the products to the customer's hand most effectively, quickly, and within terms of service and within the various account health metrics and operational KPIs that are put in place in order for a new brand to be successful on the platform? Okay. So nobody's ever heard of the brand before. Okay. So there's no direct brand searches. If nobody's ever heard of it before, nobody's searching for it. So the way that you're going to win on Amazon is A, your operations have to be dialed in, which we just discussed, but B, you've got to win the search bar. And I think CNBC just rolled out an article this week that said that 79% of consumers online that are ready to buy are doing so on Amazon. That's where they're starting their journey. And what they're doing is using the search bar on the platform. So if I'm a new brand, the way we would approach it is by identifying the most relevant and primary search terms that a consumer would use to find their products, okay, that are not branded search because the brand has no equity. And we would put together a strategy and plan around how to rank and index for those particular keywords, because it's guaranteed if you can get to the first page of search results for a search term that's got a set of traffic and revenue volume behind it, you will generate sales. 60 to 70% of consumers don't go past the first page of search results on Amazon. And a larger percentage don't make it past the top 2-3 organic results. So literally, if we can identify the search terms and there's good volume for those terms, and we can get your products to rank in the top 3 slots and or on the first page, you will generate sales. So the question is, how do you do that? And what are the requirements? If it's a high volume search term and there's a lot of competition, you got to buy your way to the top. Okay. You've got to spend money. You've got to get your product in front of eyeballs, and you've got to start driving traffic and conversions. Ultimately, the goal is you want to rank organically. So you're not paying for these sales because that business doesn't scale long term. But in the short term, if you're brand building, you're going to have to buy the traffic. You're going to have to buy the business. So what we're finding is if a brand wants to launch on the platform, there's no equity built into that brand search. In a lot of cases, you better take a long-term approach and have some capital to invest into traffic driving in order to be successful. So that's how we would approach it. It's infrastructure, operations, fulfillment, product positioning, advertising, and then building phenomenal product listings, okay? Product detail pages that are going to drive the highest conversion rate possible. And if you can do those three things, you got a good shot.
That's exciting. So what I'm hearing too is if it's hard for you to break in as a new brand, the upside is it's also going to be hard for your competition. There's a little bit of value there. And the way I've been thinking, you can tell me your take on this analogy, but there's physical shelf space. You know, if I go to Kroger or I go to Walmart or whatever, there's physical shelf space at these retailers. And on Amazon, these search terms have a virtual shelf space. It's called page one. Unless there's a whole new category created, the virtual shelf space doesn't increase. So you got to really fight for that position at the top of the shelf.
Yeah, it's a good reference. So we're dealing with an unlimited shelf. There's somewhere between 400 and 500 million products on the platform. So we're dealing with an unlimited shelf, but still the concept applies and the analogy is right. We want to be either on the end cap or we want to be at eye level. It's page one or in the top three slots. So that concept still rings true for Amazon.
Interesting. Now you just mentioned getting your listing right. What are some common errors that I think even large brands, they can be extremely successful in retail, but haven't done anything on Amazon. So there's just little things that go wrong that you don't think of. I'd love to hear your rundown on the way to make a great Amazon listing.
Yeah. So there's a few key components. And the first one I'm going to start with is product imagery and digital assets. This is not a new concept. You know, these consumers are not going to the store, touching the fabric, trying on the shirt, getting to have that experience in person. The way that you can get as close to possible to that experience is by having good digital assets. Okay, so product photography. It's got to be within Amazon's guidelines, which there are many as it relates to photography. The goal is we want to have very defined product shots. We want to have very solid lifestyle shots so we can actually get the consumer to envision themselves using the product the way it's intended to be used. And a lot of this is category dependent, but we need to understand size and scale and specifications. So we want the consumer to be able to get comfortable and understand the key callouts and value drivers of the product just based off of the images. I guess an example for me is recently I was in the market for a wine fridge. So when I'm looking for a wine fridge on Amazon, you know what? I would love to go to the store and try and pick one out and see it and touch it and feel it. But you know what? There's just not the assortment. I want the options. So what do I care about in a wine fridge? Well, I want to know the size. I want to see the drawers. I want to see the mechanics. I need to understand the dimensions. So put the product at scale, put it in use, help me visualize what it's actually going to look like in my kitchen. And if you can do that, you can be successful. There's also product videos that is an option for brand registered consumers. Make sure the consumer can buy your product and get comfortable and confident about the product and how it fits into their lifestyle just by looking at the images. And that's above the fold on the detail page, but also below the fold where you can create some really intense and more advanced content. So to reinforce this point, mobile consumption on Amazon and buying is like the fastest growing consumer segment. And I don't know if you, Lance, have ever looked at a product detail page on your phone, but you've got to scroll three or four times to get past the images. And so you've got a very short period of time to capture the attention of that consumer, fully explain what your product does, why it's valuable, how it's going to fit into their life, and get them to convert. So that's one piece. Is imagery. The second piece is copyright and content. The reason this is important is because most of the real estate on an Amazon detail page is indexable in their search algorithm. With a brand that has not existed before, I'm searching for some generic term and I'm holding a black pen in my hand and I want to launch a new black pen. Well, what is a consumer going to search for to find this black pen? So the key is identifying those search terms and then making sure that your content and your copyright is SEO-able and is using those primary search terms because that's going to trigger the search algorithm at Amazon to potentially index your product. And so we want to make sure that we're SEOing the detail page right. And then once a consumer gets to the page, if you've got good content that can answer all of their questions, then you can create a listing that drives a high conversion rate. And when I talked about iterating, this is partially what I'm talking about as it relates to content is you might create your initial product detail page and think you just absolutely nailed it. But if you're doing it the right way, you are constantly evaluating the productivity of the listing, the conversion rate on the listing, and reading the reviews and the feedback that you're getting on the listing. Because 9 times out of 10, what we see is the reviews are questions that should be answered in the bullet points, in the product description, in the digital content. That's what drives conversion, is cutting through and answering the consumer's questions as concisely and as quickly as possible. So a lot of times we have to iterate. You know, maybe we missed something in our spin up and our research that needs to be addressed, and we'll change a title, we'll change a bullet, we'll create a new image.
No, that makes sense. And the beautiful thing is you're getting that feedback so quickly,
right,
that you can keep iterating.
Yeah. There's a relationship with the consumer, and that feedback loop, constantly evaluating it and closing it is valuable. So you have to use the data.
So when you're looking at putting together a listing, we'll just take the photography, and how much do you think a good listing should cost to create, right? That new brand trying to put some parameters around, we need 3 months to 6 months of ad buying in the keyword, and that's probably dependent on how competitive the keyword is. But when we're looking just the photography for it, again, that moat element, what do you think it costs to make a good listing?
Just from a straight photography standpoint, I mean, we have a bunch of photographers that we use, and they'll charge anywhere between $100 and $500 a picture. And you want to find somebody that understands the requirements. But, you know, I guess the average Amazon detail page gives you like 7 options for photos. So seven photo slots. So, you know, if you do the math and we use the high number, $500 a photo, times 7, you know, you're at $3,500. If you want to create some infographs that require some design work, it might be more than that. If you want to create a product video, you're going to pay extra. So I'd say anywhere from, you know, $1,000 to $5,000, if you're starting from scratch and you've got no content, is probably reasonable, which does not include any sort of advertising spend.
Yeah. And I imagine that it's just, you know, not all keywords cost the same amount. There's probably some hyper competitive categories and some that aren't quite as much.
Yeah, and honestly, the strategies differ as well. So we might, depending upon what you're trying to accomplish, you might not want to go after those hyper competitive keywords, even though you're competing in that space. We might want to target more longer tail or tertiary search terms because we think we have a higher chance of converting. And we've seen that happen, is tricking the search algorithm, converting at a much higher level on longer tail or tertiary search terms, and kind of backdooring our way into ranking for these primary terms that were 10 times more expensive. Depends on the tolerance of the brand, what the strategy is, the level of resources they have on tap. And, you know, that's what we do. We help define all of that.
As you were talking earlier, it just reminded me of AdWords, and I know Google Shopping is still very relevant and still a big thing, but with that quantity of commercial searches, Amazon's role as a search engine is just huge. I don't know if they publish their algorithm more than Google does, but you know, if you're going to break down a little bit around the Amazon algorithm, what factors have you seen influence ranking? And is there a factor that's just head and shoulders more important than the other ones?
The algorithm, they don't publish. It's actually a separate entity inside of Amazon that's called the A9 algorithm, and it's actually a separate team, and they don't publish it. Everything I'm telling you is just based on what we've learned. The two biggest factors are, the single biggest is relevancy. And you got to think about this through the Amazon lens. Their goal, Amazon's singular goal, is to provide the best customer experience for the prime consumer. And the way they do that, there's a lot of ways they do that. You know, they provide amazing fulfillment and assortment and options of pricing. But the other way is through relevancy. If I'm searching for a multicolored pen for my daughter in the search bar, well, the search algorithm has to display the most relevant product options for me as a consumer. I don't want to sift through pages and pages until I find the right item. So if Amazon can properly display the most relevant product for that given search term, that provides the best customer experience. And so for us, you know, one of the key elements is relevancy. Is our product relevant for the search term that we're going after. And if it is, we want to spend some time on it. The other key factor is conversion rates. If you can tell Amazon's search algorithm that your product has a high conversion rate and a higher chance that a consumer, once they click on it, is going to buy the product, well, that tells them that you've got a relevant item that is going to make that customer happy. And so they're going to display your product higher up in search results. So those are really the two key big factors that come to mind as it relates to search. And again, it just goes back to the core. Like, can you create good products that people like with good listings, with a high conversion rate? If you can do all that, you can be successful. They don't let you peek under the hood, but we've seen those are the two biggest factors that drive placement on the platform.
So speaking of conversion rate, what are some conversion rates you expect to see? Like, let's take a product. Obviously, price impacts that a whole lot. We'll say you got a $20 to $50 product. How do you benchmark what a decent conversion rate is in that category?
That's a very loaded question. It depends on product category. A normal kind of target conversion rate is about 10%.
Oh, cool. Wow, that's just so high compared to, your own Shopify store or something. 10%.
But it varies. Some categories are far lower and some are much higher. So.
Sure. No, that's interesting for context that you just have a big spread, but still, I mean, if somebody's on Amazon for a commercial search, that does make sense that it would be quite high. Now, when you guys are thinking through like the tools to even assess what keywords to go after, are there any tools that you recommend or say like, oh, definitely check out this tool, but maybe we don't have to throw anybody under the bus, but just what are the ones that you'd probably, that you guys have found a lot of value in?
From a channel key point of view, we've developed a lot of our tools internally, and then they're just proprietary based on the data that we get and we aggregate and what our knowledge base is. So we've got a bunch of proprietary tools that we use to support our clients. Some of the third-party tools, which are all really good, some better than others, and there's at the root of this, okay, just know that Amazon doesn't give a ton of data away. So all these tools are pulling in third-party data and making assumptions. So just know that whatever the data you get is going to be wrong, and there's going to be some deviation. We've been a fan of Jungle Scout for a period of time, for a long time. We've been a fan of Merchant Words for a long period of time. We like the guys over at Seller Labs, Feedback Genius and Scope. We're testing a new platform now called Helium 10, which is kind of aggregating a lot of tools together. There's a bunch of them out there, and I could keep riffing on this. Those are a few that we like. Another one's Feedback Whiz. It depends on what you're trying to accomplish. For straight keyword search volume and trying to handicap the market, Helium 10's good, Jungle Scout's good, Merchant Words is really good.
That's great. That's very helpful. Where I think that the spirit of the question is really you hit the nail on the head. If you're going to try to come in and say we're brute forcing our way into the brand or into these keywords, which one should we go with?
Yeah. And the key, honestly, Lance, is you got to be able to read in between the lines. The data is there. It's raw. It's wrong. We've seen deviations somewhere between 20 and 50% in some cases because we can test it. But you've got to be able to really understand it and in some cases kind of read in between the lines.
That makes total sense. Well, let's shift gears a little bit. So, you alluded to at the beginning of the conversation that Amazon has changed a lot and it will keep changing. So, but you're very bullish on Amazon. So let's dive into that a little bit. Now, what do you see coming down the pipe to change Amazon? Or how do you think Amazon's planning on changing things?
One of the big things that we're watching out for right now is traditionally at Amazon, if you wanted to engage with the platform, there's really two ways you would do it. One is you'd become a vendor of Amazon's and set up what's called a vendor central account or a first party account or a 1P account. There's a lot of different ways people describe it. Okay, so that's essentially a model where Amazon becomes your retailer. They're in a lot of cases sending you POs and you're shipping them product in bulk and they are the seller of record on the platform. So it ships from and sold by Amazon. If you've seen that on a product detail page before, you're making wholesale margins. The other way is by setting up a seller account, what's called a marketplace account or a seller central account. And that is a model where you are selling direct to consumer. You can either do the fulfillment directly to the consumer out of your warehouse, or you can leverage one of the various fulfillment programs that Amazon has put in place. The big one is called FBA, or Fulfillment by Amazon. And essentially, you can sell direct to consumer, make retail margins and not wholesale margins, and have Amazon do the fulfillment for a fee, obviously. Those have been the two primary ways. Vendor Central and Seller Central are separate UIs, separate platforms. And traditionally at Amazon, the teams, the retail teams, which are the vendor teams or the wholesale teams, have been completely separated from the marketplace teams and the seller teams. There's literally like a Chinese wall in between the two. And you would go, we visit them in Seattle on a quarterly basis. And it was very clear that the teams were separate and they didn't really communicate that closely together. So, you know, there are brands that are vendors and sellers. In a lot of cases, you know, Amazon wouldn't even kind of pull in that data and those teams wouldn't be communicating to each other. So one of the big things that we're watching is the consolidation of the retail and marketplace teams inside of Amazon under a single org and the eventual launching of a program that people are calling One Vendor. And I don't know if that's the right name. I mean, there's been no official kind of announcement from Amazon, but it's, you know, a lot of kind of noise. And essentially what we're hearing they're going to do is consolidate Vendor Central and Seller Central into a single UI platform where, you know, our clients and all brands that are selling through are going to have to operate on. There's a lot of implications to that. And in the last few weeks, there's been some announcements that we've seen and observations that we've made of our clients on the platform. And I've done some speaking about this, and you know, there were some articles written where we talked about this, is Amazon has pretty much overnight in a lot of cases, and they've walked this back, but they shut down their vendor relationships. Brand X, as of Friday, was doing, you know, a certain amount of wholesale volume with Amazon. And then that following Monday, Amazon basically shut their business down and essentially said, if you want to maintain your Amazon business, you have to become a seller, okay, and no longer be a vendor. And the implications behind that are significant in a lot of cases if the brands aren't prepared. So there's just different operational requirements, infrastructure requirements. It's a whole separate platform in UI. That was one of the first big moves that we saw that we think are pointing towards this one vendor concept rolling out sometime in the next 90 to 180 days. So we're watching that closely. Essentially, they could force vendors to become sellers, and the opposite could be true. They could force sellers to become vendors. There's a control element that Amazon continues to maintain. And what we're seeing is they only want to buy the inventory and have vendors selling most high volume, most strategic vendors, and everybody else are pushing towards becoming a seller. But there are a lot of sellers that have big, high volume businesses as well that we think they're going to push to become vendors and force them to do so, which has a lot of implications. So that's one of the big things we're seeing.
With that notion of making a seller become a vendor, you know, if that happened, what would that mean to a business who is a seller doing, you know, $10 million a year in revenue and then expect to become a vendor?
Now, this varies and is dependent upon a lot of different factors. But when running a side-by-side margin analysis on Amazon, factoring in fees between a wholesale and a retail business, as a retailer, you're doubling your gross margin dollar on every single transaction. So theoretically, if Amazon forces your hand to become a vendor, you might lose half your profitability. One of the other big factors is you lose an element of control as well. So the moment you decide to sell your products to Amazon or they force you to become a vendor, they are in essence in control of your brand. They can control your pricing. Okay. So the retail price point, they control that. And so, you know, if you want to try and mitigate channel conflict, and we've had a lot of clients that are trying to do this, you know, an example would be a customer or a client that sells products into Nordstrom, but also sells on Amazon. Well, they want their products to be priced, they want price parity, right? They don't want Amazon to sell below Nordstrom because that upsets Nordstrom and it creates channel conflict. And so we've had a lot of clients that prefer the seller model because they can control their own pricing. And the moment you become a vendor, you don't control that. Amazon has an automated pricing algorithm and they scrape the internet and they'll match the lowest landed price and you can't control that. So that's another big implication there.
Yeah, that does sound like a big deal. There's one trend that something to watch out on. Anything else that you see coming down the pipe where you go, this could be a big deal?
Yeah, there's a couple topics. One is the advertising business. This thing is just exploding and it's going to continue to explode. The ad business for them is not going anywhere and they're putting a lot of force behind it. What we're watching out for is new ad units, new ad programs that will continue to evolve. Mobile and video advertising is coming, if not already in place. And just the idea that Amazon is a pay-to-play platform is real, not going anywhere. And the fees to advertise are going to continue to go up. And a data point that we pulled is from Q4 to Q4, from 2017 to 2018, we saw the average bid amount on a keyword go up 20%.
You know, this goes back to that virtual shelf space analogy, right?
That's right.
If more brands want to get on Amazon and there's no increase in available space on the top, like there's only three top listings just by definition. And so, man, yeah, that makes sense. It's kind of like the Facebook ad load that we've seen happen.
Yeah. And the UI and the interface and the ease of spending the dollar is getting continually better and they're pushing it. So, you know, 4 or 5 years ago it was in beta, there's no competition. You could crush it on advertising and not spend a lot of money. But just with the adoption of more intelligent brands and the ease of using the tools and the ad units they continue to roll out, it's just going to get more and more competitive.
Yeah. No, it makes total sense. One of the things I like to just get a gauge on categories for, kind of what categories you're excited about. So if you had to start a brand tomorrow, you know, or you had to invest in a brand tomorrow, you couldn't pick the product, you could only pick the category. What category would you go into and why would that be an exciting category?
It's a good question. My answer is probably CPG right now. It feels like CPG is less defined on Amazon and it's a little more open, wide open. You know, the adoption of consumers buying groceries on the platform, I think is a little far behind or further behind than somebody that wants to buy a pair of shoes or a baby blanket or a hoodie. And so it feels like there's some room and opportunity for CPG brands to perform. And additionally, the infrastructure of buying groceries as it relates to buying products on Amazon specifically is getting better. And the blended kind of mindset and network of brick and mortar and marketplace, I think, is getting more substantial. And so it feels to me like CPG is a growing category with a lot of room, a lot of opportunity, and there are some really nice tool sets available on Amazon to create some continuity around continual adoption of your product and repeat purchasing. So that would be my answer, CPG. One of the other big trends we're watching is Amazon B2B, another 10 plus billion dollar business unit inside of Amazon that I don't think anybody is talking about. And they are coming on hard and fast. And B2B is a separate platform for business consumers where you can go and buy products in bulk and get volume pricing discounts and, you know, do some of the more traditional business buying activities, you know, like invoicing. And they're just making it more relevant to business consumers. They're connecting with some major ERP and buying systems and platforms. So, you know, schools and hospitals can buy their supplies through Amazon and get volume pricing. I think that is an enormous trend that nobody is talking about. So another category of products that I would consider launching are B2B products.
That sounds phenomenal. And then what's the converse, right? What are some of the trends that, that you really have to protect the downside on in the coming 2-3 years?
What jumps to my mind, and we're seeing a lot of this, is supplements. Supplements we've found to be challenging for various reasons. It's a very high margin business for the manufacturers. So it's very competitive. The advertising requirements and competition is significant, and the bid amounts are high, and there's a ton of competition, and there's a ton of noise, and there's not a lot of FDA regulation. That's a challenging category that if I were to launch a product, I probably wouldn't touch it. On Amazon, I'm not saying it's not a good category, but Amazon, it's a very challenging one.
Yeah, no, that makes total sense. Any other final thoughts or questions I didn't ask you that you just think people should know about Amazon today and where it's going?
There's been some news lately about Elizabeth Warren, has made a statement that she wants to break up some of these big tech companies because they're monopolies, or in this case, Amazon's monopoly. And I don't necessarily buy that. There's just so much value creation for the consumer that's happening on the platform that doesn't necessarily scare me at all. And I told you I'm bullish on Amazon, and that's part of the equation too, is could the political environment get to a point where it puts the business in jeopardy? I'm sure it could, but from a monopolistic standpoint, I'm not worried about that. There's just so much adoption, too much consumerism happening, and too much value being created for customers. I don't think Amazon's going anywhere. It's always going to change. But at the end of the day, they create value for customers, and it's easier for families to shop and buy products and save time and manage their hectic schedules and lifestyle. And Amazon supports that. My general feedback is stay bullish on Amazon. I know I am from a business standpoint, but also from just a straight investment standpoint. I like what they're doing. They are aggressive. And if you've got a high margin business, they're going to look at it and they might come after it. If you're a brand, get on the platform, leverage it, utilize it the right way. And I don't think it's going anywhere.
Great, great word. All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on. Just really exciting, Dan, to hear about your views and experience on Amazon and kind of bring another perspective. So thanks a lot.
Lance, appreciate it. Let us know if you need anything in the future.
Thanks for listening. If you love the show, leave a review on iTunes. See you next time.